Bigfoot, Nessie, Chupacabra. Are these and other purported monsters the real deal? Are they really not more than a fantasy of those who want to believe? We'll ask those questions on The Cryptid Report. Welcome to The Cryptid Report. I am Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. And today we're going to talk about, the technical term is the Big Mac Daddy of the cryptid world, and that is none other than Bigfoot, and we have a great guest to do that. We're talking with journalist and author Mary Joyce. We're going to talk about her book on Bigfoot, Bigfoot Beyond the Footprints, and she has a really interesting background. She has worked for two major metropolitan newspapers, the Orlando Sentinel in Florida as an artist and columnist, and the Oakland Press in Michigan as a Sunday magazine editor and then feature editor. On the side, she's written magazine articles and books, and since 2008, she has been the main researcher and editor for the Skyships Over Cashiers website, which features a wide variety of cutting-edge topics, from UFOs to secret underground bases, from Bigfoot to Cherokee little people. And we're very interested in her perspective. She's been a frequent guest on radio and TV, including Coast to Coast AM and the Travel Channel, and been interviewed worldwide. And glad to add our show to her pantheon of appearances. Mary Joyce, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, it's always good to talk to you.
So, Mary, here is the question. You go from being a journalist investigating mob stories, including Jimmy Hoffa's death, I understand, to going to kind of these more, I guess, what some people would consider esoteric topics. How and why did that happen?
It wasn't by intention. I moved to the mountains of Western North Carolina, and I moved into a hotspot of all sorts of activity. We have Bigfoot and little people and underground basins and UFOs. And so I kind of walked into it, and I have a natural curiosity like I know you do. And I just pursued some of those things, and it evolved into a website, which we've been doing since 2008.
Now, in terms of Bigfoot, were you always a believer in Bigfoot, or is this something, are you a believer in him now, I guess, is the proper question?
Well, I absolutely believe in him now. I didn't give it much thought. I'd certainly heard of him. But it wasn't until this move to North Carolina that I began to really take some of these topics seriously. I began to see and hear the evidence and for myself, and also interviewed really credible people. And it was a major learning experience for me. And the reason I wrote this book was because I was sick and tired of just these stories about Bigfoot, footprints, and people always portrayed the Bigfoot as kind of like a monster. And what I found is that they have a very human side. And now I'm talking about the good side of humanity, not what I keep seeing on the news today. But they have families and they have friends and they help people. And I thought people needed to know that other side of them.
Bigfoot. Here is going, I'm going to give you the garden variety objection. And some of this, I understand why people would say this. Look, we've been looking for Bigfoot for decades. And if Bigfoot exists, why isn't there a body or at least some kind of remains? Now, I know the standard answer to that is, you know, usually walking through the woods, you won't find a bear carcass or a deer carcass, but you'll find something. Why haven't we found remains, found things, or have we found things that have been maybe covered up?
So you're talking about finding bodies. Some of the people who have Bigfoot living on their land also have a lot of caves in the area. One of the theories is that they bury them in caves, the bodies. There is a whole different aspect to the Bigfoot, and I'm not ready to jump on the bandwagon one way or the other on this. But there's a lot of indications that they may have an interdimensional ability. People talk about them vanishing right in front of their eyes. So they may not be exactly the way other physical things are, but we see all sorts of evidence that they live in a very real world. So I've really got to come down hard on one side or the other. I've seen the footprints. I've heard them. We've done all sorts of experiments with them to see what they like and what they don't like. I just am not ready to say that they have that ability to be invisible, though there's indications that they can. In that case, they're not going to leave a body.
And then a very good point indeed. To you, what is the most compelling evidence for the existence of Bigfoot? What do you feel is the thing that makes you say, yep, this is a real thing?
Okay, I'll talk in the first person here. The reason our website is called Skyships Over Cashers is because there is a mountaintop community called Cashers, spelled just like a cashier at the grocery store. And we've seen all sorts of evidence of the Bigfoot in that area. So one of the mountain men took me up to the top of a ridge. We went on a gravel road, and then he took a machete, not through the fence, but to cut a path through the woods. And he took me to see one of the large Bigfoot caves. None of us are going to find that. And this happens to be the man's property. He's lived there all his life. And he's a hunter, and he did discover it. As we walked into the woods, we heard this bird sound, but it didn't sound like a bird. And then off in the distance, in the direction we were headed, it was like there was an answer with the same kind of a bird call kind of sound. And then everything went silent. We also saw Bigfoot footprints right where that first sound was heard. And our conclusion was that there was one Bigfoot warning the other Bigfoot that there were two of these annoying humans coming in their direction. So that's a firsthand experience. I've seen lots of footprints. There's a cave that's on a very steep mountain. You would have to have mountain gear to get up there. I've gotten pictures of it with my zoom lens because I'm not into mountain climbing. And there's a regular path through the laurels that come down from there. And many times we've found footprints there. There have been some people who have stopped to see the footprints, and they can still smell the smell that's associated with Bigfoot. And oftentimes along that path, those Bigfoot are headed to an apple tree. And we've done lots of experiments with food to see what they really like. Apples are up there at the top of the list. They love apples. So those are the kind of things that I have seen firsthand. And then I have interviewed people who come across as really, really credible. They're, you know, they're professional. They've been, one guy had been with the sheriff's department in Florida, and he had to come up to, he had to retire because he had cancer. And he moved to a pristine area with the mountain going straight up behind him, very isolated. And he began to have sounds and things that got his attention. He eventually became friends with the male Bigfoot. It was a family of four, two teenagers and a male and a female. And the Bigfoot male would come down when this former sheriff was working his organic garden. And he was doing organic gardening because he wanted to do everything he could to fight off the cancer that he had. But the Bigfoot would come down and telepathically communicate with him, and he would share food from the garden with the Bigfoot.
Now, I take it that you see the species of Bigfoot as more benevolent rather than malevolent. Is that correct?
What I hear consistently is that the only time that you hear these really, truly awful stories about Bigfoot, it's usually when people with guns are coming in their direction, and they don't much care for them. And I can't say I blame them. If someone's sure. coming at me with a gun, I'm not sure I would be very hospitable either. But if people are simply walking into their territory and they'd rather not be bothered, they will throw stones in the direction of the people, but they'll never hit them. So, you know, I don't think they have a tendency to naturally be violent. I just don't see signs of that.
Now,
you want me to jump into a cute story?
Yes, please do.
Okay, I will do that. There is a woman who's had Bigfoot living on her property practically all of her life. And she has, or had, not anymore, but she had a Shetland pony. And it was really one of those that didn't want to be contained in a fence. It would bust the fence. It would charge through it, hop over it. And so she would keep it tied on a 250-foot boat rope. And every night, the little Shetland pony was all tied up. Every morning, it was gone. She would find it in the woods around her home, tied up someplace else. The ponies... food bucket and water bucket would be dragged out there. And the part of the story that makes this interesting is that one day she noticed there were small, muddy butt prints on the back of the pony. The Bigfoot were taking their kids for rides on her Shetland pony. And I just thought that was cute.
That's great. That's a great story. Now, physically, you know, we've heard different things. To the best of your research, what does Bigfoot look like?
They'll vary in size. The ones that are down in Florida, which are often called skunk apes, seem to be smaller. Here in the mountains of North Carolina, we seem to be more in the middle range of sizes. And out on the west is where you get the biggest ones. So there's a variation in size. According to this woman, Robin McRae, who has the Bigfoot on her land, she said there's quite a variety of Bigfoot. She said some of them have white skin, gray skin, black skin, light brown, tan skin. And the hair color will, you know, go from kind of a reddish color, which seems kind of common around here, to, you know, darker shades, darker reddish color and brown. So there's a lot of variety. She said even the eye colors will be different from one to the other. So to say that they're all the same is not accurate. I don't know if you've ever heard of the research of Dr. Ketchum.
Yes.
She got into a whole lot of trouble with the academic scientific community when she came out with her DNA research that showed that the Bigfoot is half human and half some unknown primate. She since then has been supported by other people who have followed up on her research, and they have supported what she discovered. So I refer to the Bigfoot as like a distant cousin, because the mother's side is human and the father's side cannot be identified. It's a primate that's not recorded.
Now, in terms of population, are there any estimates to how large the population is of Bigfoot, say, in North America?
I don't know how anybody could ever come up with a figure like that. They tend to be in smaller groups, a lot of times family groups, and that's, it'll, you know, strictly be the family. A typical family is two adults and two children. But then you'll see signs where, you know, they will interact at some time with other groups. But they're very solitary. They live in isolation. Now, I don't know how you would do a population survey on a group that tries to avoid us.
That's a very good point indeed. Now,
in fact, if somebody came up with a figure like that, I would question it, because I just don't see how it's possible.
Now, when I think of Bigfoot, the study of Bigfoot research, and this may be wrong, this may be a misnomer, but I feel like we're stuck in the mud. It kind of reminds me of what I felt about UFOs a few years back. It was kind of like it was just the same thing over and over and over. And then lo and behold, in the UFO world, we had, you know, everything that's happened, and things seem to have shifted, and maybe we're not at disclosure, but things are churning. At Bigfoot, I feel that we're at the stage where we were several years ago with UFOs. It was just kind of more of the same. Do you think we could have a similar breakthrough with Bigfoot? Do you think there's any hope that there would be a discovery that would bring the general populace and the mainstream media and mainstream science on board and saying, yeah, this is real? Do you think that there's hope for that in our lifetime?
Well, there's something that was on the Canadian morning news program, and I'm going to have it posted, I think, by the weekend. And it's a major television network in Canada, and they're talking about they're actually UAPs, which is unidentified aerial phenomenon, because there's this shape-shifting thing that was seen outside of jet passenger window. But when I really dug into it, I wanted to get back to the original footage that was taken, taken by this passenger, and I was able to find it. And what I discovered was that was actually taken in, I think, 2018. So it took several years for it to ever make mainstream news. So much of the most interesting things in the world are coming out first in programs like yours, in websites like Sky Should Filter Caches. And there's more and more of those kind of, I don't know, it's like third tier information sites that are getting more and more information out there. And as that happens, ultimately it becomes more like a tidal wave and forces the mainstream media to pay attention. And perhaps that is what will happen with the Bigfoot too.
You talked about some of the foods and things that Bigfoot enjoys. What do we know about their, or what do we think we know about their life? Do they have family, like the nuclear family? I mean, what
Absolutely.
Do we know? Yeah,
Absolutely.
What do we know about their living habits?
They live very simply. If caves are available, they seem to like to live in caves. They also live in like rough forest area, or but it's always away from people as much as possible. As far as the foods that they like, we actually did experiments. There was one gal who was helping us out with the website, and she would put one kind of food out at a time along a path where we had seen many multiple footprints, and we discovered what they do and do not like. Apples are always at the top of the list. They seem to be more like human children. They don't much care for the vegetables. They didn't like the cucumbers. They didn't like, I don't know, other green things. But they especially did not like asparagus. And not only did they try it, you could see where they had spit it out. But nuts and fruits are things that they absolutely love. And we also did an experiment with the containers we put the food in. We started putting things out there in like a cooler for a six pack, and we leave the lid just slightly ajar so they could see what was in there. They would tip it over and take what they like. They did the same thing when we put the food out in a basket with a handle. They tip it over and take what they like. The only thing they picked up in the way of a container and took with them was a basket without a handle. It's like they were suspicious, or maybe had bad experiences with traps or something, because they weren't about to stick their hands in the two containers that had handles. But the other one, we found it down the path after they'd eaten all the food, they left the basket behind. So they also will return gifts. It's very, very strange. I had made a couple of things. I did some wood carving, wood burning items, and we would put out there one at a time. And they didn't pay much attention to it, but I think it was the butterfly that they liked, and they took it. And that was not too far before Christmas one year. And during Christmas, all of us were traveling, and nobody was putting out anything for the Bigfoot. When we came back, they had returned the little butterfly. And we began to wonder if they thought they were being punished because they took that. We weren't sure of it. But we checked with Joan Ocean, who is probably the best known dolphin expert in the world, who has also had face-to-face contact with Bigfoot. And she said that they often will, it's almost like they will borrow the gift that you give them, but then they will return it. They don't seem to be the collectors of things like we humans tend to be.
Now, do people report symbiotic relationships with Bigfoot? You know, I'm sure you've got the encounters where people are scared or frightened and those kind of things. But in terms of people who, yeah, the Bigfoot brings me an offering or a present. I've talked to people like that who say that they believe that they have Bigfoot living out behind their house in the woods, and they will bring dead animals and things as like tribute or as like the gift, and then they'll exchange things. I can't remember the gentleman that was, but I had a guest who did that. Do you see a lot of that where people live in cooperation with Bigfoot?
Well, like the man who had the garden, that began to refer to him, the Bigfoot as Fred and his family.
Yeah.
That certainly was a relationship. The woman who I told you about with the Shetland pony, one day she was looking out her window and she saw somebody walking on her property, and she went out to see what was going on. And it was actually a Bigfoot mama with her baby. And it was the first time in her whole life she'd ever seen the baby. And it was like, after all those years, they finally trusted her enough for her to see the baby. And Robin described her as really a big gal, because she went out afterwards and measured the tree mark behind the Bigfoot, because it was standing along the tree line. And then she measured it. So the Bigfoot was like 9.5 to 10 feet tall. And the baby, she would set it down in front of him, and then the baby would run up a tree about 2 or 3 feet and then come down, go to the next tree, run up about 2 or 3 feet and come back down. And when it got too far away, the mother would pick it up and bring it back, and the game of climbing the tree would start all over again. But that was after years of interacting with the Bigfoot that they finally trusted Robin enough for her to be able to see the baby. And I did like a ratio. And what I found was that the baby, when I did a human size to a newborn and the Bigfoot to the size of this baby or her baby, it actually would have been smaller in proportion. It would have been smaller than a human newborn. So it was a very young baby, and she was very fortunate to see it. One other man who, again, lives out in the wooded area, has Bigfoot living around him, and he's interacting with them for years. And he provided what proved to be a wonderful Christmas story, because he was allowed to see the brand new baby that had been born. And this was on Christmas Day, so he felt it was about the most special thing he could imagine. So there have been people who have been embraced by these Bigfoot families, so that they get a true glimpse of or an embrace by the Bigfoot. And that's got to be pretty special for people who encounter that.
Do you worry if mankind truly discovers Bigfoot and it becomes common knowledge and accepted that Bigfoot exists, that mankind, based on its track record, will destroy Bigfoot?
Right now, we have too many people who want to get the carcass, too many people who want to kill just to have the evidence or to show that they're marching or whatever it is. And I really would be concerned, and perhaps am concerned, about the Bigfoot, because I will not specifically tell people where some of these locations are. I'll give the general area, because there are hunters who would just love to shoot them and kill them. So even now, I'm concerned about the Bigfoot, and try in my own way to let people know about them, but also to try to protect them.
I mean, we've had people on the show who have said that was their aim, and you know, again, we have people on the show all the time. We don't, the shows, plural, that we don't necessarily agree with, because, you know, that's not my role, is to agree or disagree with you. My role is to bring out the information that people decide. But personally, I was kind of found that abhorrent. Now, I'm not anti-hunting. If somebody hunts for meat and those kind of things in general, but just going out to shoot something to get a carcass, I'm not a fan necessarily of that. And I thought, oh my goodness. I mean, I can see you want to get proof, and long as you could do that without hurting something, I think that's fine, as long as you're not trespassing or doing anything else illegal. But shooting a creature just for the sake of shooting it, that seems, a Bigfoot seems troublesome to me.
And also the Bigfoot, they run away from people who have that kind of mindset. And according to the former sheriff, he said that humans broadcast their intense emotions like a megahorn, and they, you know, Bigfoot are aware of them long before the humans would even know it, and they will try to stay away from them.
Well, it is really very interesting, and the thing is that, I mean, and this happened with UFOs as well. And maybe I'll ask you why, because you're in a good position having been a mainstream journalist and so forth. Why is Bigfoot a joke now? And UFOs for the longest time became a joke, and all of a sudden they're not a joke now. Why does that happen?
I remember back in the days of Larry King, they have somebody on talking about UFOs. But they always had to have the guy who was skeptical and just did not believe and was, you know, poo-pooing it totally. Well, that evolved to the point where the people who had experiences or interactions could talk about it without having to have this counterbalance to somebody who was just an adamant skeptic. So we humans are kind of slow. It's an evolutionary process for us to change our mindset, but I think it will change.
I mean, I don't have problems with skeptics in general, but actually the specific show that I'm thinking about that matched that was the Larry King that he did with Robert Salas, Robert Hastings, and Dr. Bob Jacobs, with Bill Nye, the science guy, as the skeptic. And Dr. Jacobs, I was a broadcasting professor of mine. So, and I had heard his story 30 years ago, his UFO story, and his story never changed and hasn't changed to this day. And I fully believe him 100%. And the problem I had with, in that case, if people are familiar with that, Bill Nye had these objections, but the objections were not specific to Dr. Jacobs' case. They were these generalized objections that he would throw it up. Basically, because I don't believe in this, it can't be true. You must be mistaken. I mean, that's basically what it boiled down to. And that's my problem. I don't necessarily explain or believe or buy into everything somebody ever says that they saw. But if you're going to come out both guns blazing, objecting, you should at least give that person the benefit of knowing about their experience in addressing that specific experience. And it seemed to me that Nye, in that case, the first time he had ever heard of this case was in that show, and Dr. Jacobs rightfully let him have it. So if you want to see that, that's on YouTube. Look up Bill Nye, Larry King, Bob Jacobs. It's quite a sight. Dr. Jacobs, he's a PhD, very smart man. So I think that Bill Nye got a little more in that case than he expected. And, he got quite the talking to, but that's my problem. It's not that, you know, I'm probably somewhat skeptical about
Bigfoot. Well, so am I. You got to remember, I have this newspaper background.
Right.
I try to back up everything.
Right.
And
but I'm
to this day, I don't swallow everything. I try to, as best I can, I try to check it out. Sometimes I have actually started writing stories, and then as I keep digging into it, I have to kill the story because I find out that there's just not enough to support it. If there's nothing wrong with being a skeptic, as long as you're not a belligerent skeptic with a preformed mindset.
I agree. And the thing is that I think that it's fair to be skeptical, but intellectually honest. And I think there's people who, you know, for example, I think about somebody like Dr. Michael Shermer, who I've interviewed before. Now, he totally disagreed with everything we were talking about on these shows, but I felt he was a gentleman about it. But again, he had a little bit of this, well, if we can't explain it, we put it up on the shelf. Basically, he said he totally bought into the idea that there's certain things we can't explain through scientific method, but we just put those on the shelf. I'm like, no, take those off the shelf. Look at them. But he was a total gentleman about it and is not one of these people who says, shut up. He's willing to listen to your argument. He may disagree with it.
I respect that.
Very much. And I respect our guest today, Mary Joyce. Very interesting conversation on Bigfoot, Beyond the Footprints. Now, Mary, tell us where we can find this book and also, very importantly, your popular website.
The book is called Bigfoot, Beyond the Footprints. It's available on Amazon. The website that I edit is called skyshiftsovercaches.com. You can probably find it just by using Skyships Over. It'll probably come up. Cashiers is spelled just like the cashier at the grocery store. And we cover things like UFOs and Bigfoot and little people and archaeological discoveries and actually just about anything that catches my attention. And I figure it's worthy of people checking into.
Well, certainly worthy of checking into the book, Bigfoot, Beyond the Footprints. Mary Joyce, thank you for joining us today.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll catch you next time on The Cryptid Report. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.